You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where our wall will be mail so it pays for itself. And you too. I'm your host, Justin M. Lesneski, and if you enjoy your trip into the midside here today, please tell a friend. Referrals are our number one source of tourism. Alternately, you can give us a 5-star review on iTunes or support us on Patreon, patreon.com/themidside. Joining me this trip from a flyover state, because he's visiting home this week, Daniel T. Richards.
Yo, yo, sup? It's good to be back in the midside this week after taking a mini vacation. I missed you all.
Our fans missed you as well. I was told Katrina is very good, but we miss Daniel.
Lies. Lies and slander. I'd rather have Katrina.
I will sidestep the obvious joke there.
It's too early in the show for that nonsense.
Introduce... Also joining us from, and I want to be very clear here that I was told to introduce him as being from here because they don't really understand this, but a whale's vagina. No, I don't know if that is some sort of sexual Pinocchio reference.
No, I'm in whale's vagina. Come on. No, I'm in San Diego, which is, Justin, if you don't get the, anyone who has to be explained this, it's not worth it anyway. I'm in whale's vagina, San Diego. I'm just staying at my friend's house, and it turns out it's a house that's owned by all these submariners. Like, they're usually like out at sea for 4 months at a time, you know, underwater in a metal tube. But when they're not, they're here. So they just like switch off. So that's kind of cool.
Also, his name is James. Because Justin never got there.
Well, I was interrupted by James. So
it was a very slow interruption, if it was.
It was a very slow interruption. And I was going to say that, too, so I appreciate you saying that, Daniel. Thank you. Yes, his name is James Elias.
There we go. I couldn't remember.
I need no introduction. Everyone knows who I am.
That's right.
All right, I want to give just a brief monologue here just to get started. This week I released a new vlog. I'm sure a lot of you have checked it out. It's on Superman's death in Batman versus Superman, and it's about how the death is not a self-sacrifice, and it really lays out what's going on in the movie thematically and the different dialogue and actions that prove that. And the tough thing for me is when I release good content like that, the internet is often a vacuum where you don't hear anything back, or if you do hear something, it's negative. But every once in a while, you hear good stuff. And I just wanted to give a brief shout out to Twitter user Kane Martin, because I sent it to him and this was his tweet back to me. This explanation is great. Like, it's pretty apparent in the film, but so many people don't get it. Crying laughing emoji. Now I can just throw this their way. Thumbs up emoji. So I appreciate the response. It's always nice to hear something like that because it's like, yeah, I'm not crazy. And somebody else actually saw the value of my content, which is rare on the internet these days because it seems like everything is just memes. And it seems like it's memes to the lowest common denominator. It's memes where it's like, this is what it was like when I took a shit yesterday.
Or when my brain took a
shit. That feeling when you have an itch on your foot.
Yeah, exactly. And then it just shows someone's foot and a finger scratching it. And it's like, why do people find these amusing? Maybe that's just a brief question I can ask you guys. Why is content that? Why are memes that? Like, remember when memes used to be, like, funny and clever, and now memes are like, let's crack open a cold one with the boys.
No, now you just sound like my grandfather. Back in my day, memes had to have a punchline. We liked it. No, they've never been funny. Stop it. Don't perpetuate that myth.
I don't know. There's some pretty funny memes. Call me base, but
yes, and you're 100% wrong.
Thanks for shitting on my point.
Look, there's always going to be content that goes to the lowest common denominator, whether it's memes or anything else. But there will be good quality content for the rest of us. It'll just be, infrequent and difficult to find.
Yeah. So help the content not be difficult to find by promoting my vlog and promoting the show. Now I just sound like this entire show is promoting itself, but I guess that's kind of what it is. That's kind of the point. So
we're okay. I wanted to note that Justin copy pasted the tweet into a document for us. And that when you copy paste emojis from Apple, so the end of the tweet was the thumbs up emoji, except that when you copy it over, it copies the yellow thumbs up and then a patch of beige.
Yeah, I didn't understand that either.
To indicate that that was supposed to be the beige hand thumb up.
Oh, is that what that is?
Whoa, yes. That's weird. That didn't happen to me because I'm on a Mac.
It abstracts out the skin color.
That seems vaguely racist.
So what Apple is really trying to say is at our base, we're all Asian.
That's right.
Or Simpsons characters.
Eh, too many fingers.
All right, let's talk about something worthwhile here, huh?
What? That would be a change.
All right, let's do it in the news with Daniel T. Richards.
Let's get this thing going with some hot Supreme Court talk.
Yeah. It's that time of year again.
A little bit this week.
That's right. Nothing says energy like talking about a Supreme Court ruling. But from time to time, the news isn't bad, and this week is one of those times. The Supreme Court this week, in a landmark case, protected speech. Yes, they actually protected speech, which actually they're wont to do, but... basically, what happened is in a case called Mittal v. Tam, a band called The Slants, they are an all-Asian American dance rock band, sought to trademark their name with the United States Patent and Trademark Office, but the PTO rejected their application, telling the band its moniker was an offensive reference to Asians, which they knew, because they're Asians. But under the Lanham Act of 1946, no trademark may, quote, disparage or bring into contempt or disrepute any persons living or dead. So Mr. Tam of the band sued, saying he and his bandmates wanted to reclaim the term as a badge of pride, and the Supreme Court agreed this week unanimously, basically with an opinion written by Justice Alito saying that, well, it's basically taking out all the government's arguments, but ultimately saying that the government has no right to censor speech that is offensive, because duh. It's a legal term. So, Justin, this is rare good news from the Supreme Court. Thoughts? Maybe we should trademark something offensive for the midside?
Well, everything about the midside is offensive, so that's I don't right. think it's possible for us to trademark something for the midside that isn't offensive. So if you're saying we should just trademark something, hold on, let me get our lawyers on it. Oh, wait, we don't have any.
I say we trademark pussy comitatus.
Yeah.
What about Schrodinger's blowjob?
Yes, that one too.
That one was very popular with our listeners.
Mm-hmm.
I have one question, though, and I'm a little confused here. Is it only okay to trademark something offensive if you're taking it back?
No. No, the justice made no difference. Basically, they... gave a broad ruling here that trademarks are not government speech, and therefore they can't regulate the content of it. So, have at it. Trademark whatever you want.
This is just amazing to me because it was unanimous. Like, how can we be so divided in this country over all this social justice nonsense, and then the Supreme Court is just that pro free speech? Like, you would think there would be one judge on the left who dissented. It's like not even Sotomayor, the newest judge, dissented.
Excuse me, that is Sotomayor.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Trademark that.
Justin, could it be that... Oh, sorry.
No. Go ahead, James. You're probably going to make the same point.
Could it... Well, I was just going to make a sarcastic point, and then you can make an actual one after me. But, Justin, could it be that the Supreme Court represents individuals who are more educated in the Constitution and therefore more likely to make a decision based on principles? Is that a possibility?
I mean, it's possible, but it hasn't proven to be true in the past, has it, Daniel?
It's been touch and go, you might say.
On free speech, it's been pretty good, though, right, Daniel?
Yes. That was going to be my overarching point, which is that actually the Supreme Court has a pretty awesome history of protecting free speech in the modern era. They've ruled unanimously several times against restrictions on speech by one government entity or another. So it's sort of the one last bash. It's why, by the way, every time a new Supreme Court case comes up, people try to figure out a way to make it a First Amendment issue. They try to make it a speech issue such that the court would be more favorable to it. It annoys me to no end that apparently the only right we can protect in this country is speech, but at least there is one.
Yeah, this is actually really funny to me because this band at one point must have, I mean, according to the article, they applied for their trademark to the USPTO, the United States Patent and Trademark Office, you know, and I actually used to work for the Patent and Trademark Office. I used to examine patents for television screens. And when you try to either approve or deny a patent, you have to search through the prior art. You have to search through like prior patents. And so I wonder what sort of prior trademarks they were looking through. Apparently the examiners looked at Urban Dictionary to confirm that slant, you know, refers to Asian people, which is really funny that you have to legally substantiate that, but I guess you do. It makes sense. And now
Urban Dictionary is where we go to legally substantiate things?
Yeah, exactly. But I remember when I worked for the Patent and Trademark Office, I used the search function. Speaking of offensive patents, I used the search function and to search for the N-word to see if there were any patents that had the N-word in it. And there were a surprising number of patents from like... like 1880 to like 1940-ish that had the N-word in it. And then I also searched the fuck word, and it turns out there is exactly one patent that has the fuck word in it, and it is actually the inventor's name. It is the inventor's last name. His name's – I forgot his first name, but it was like a normal name and then fuck, like Dave
Fuck.
You don't
have a first name if your last name is Fuck. Your name is just Fuck.
No, I mean like it was like a normal name and then Fuck. Like it was like David Fuck or something like that. I swear to God.
Yeah.
Did he get that name because when he was born and they had to dictate his name to the birth certificate person, they forgot his last name? They were like, oh, this is David Fuck.
Yeah. Something like that.
What was his name?
I'm assuming it's German.
He was English, actually, but maybe it was. Oh. Yeah, maybe it's like he was a German immigrant or something. It was for some really serious invention. It was like a semiconductor or something. Like,
oh, come on.
It wasn't like
he is literally German. That is, there's no other way around.
Yeah. I thought he was gonna say it was for a semi chub or something.
Semi chub, right?
So, getting back to the thing of substance. Remember that whole part of this conversation?
Well, I have something I wanted to say about that. So, basically, the government can call anything it wants a tax, but we're allowed to say it's whatever we want because of free speech. So as long as we let the government keep taking our money, they'll let us keep saying whatever we want. Is that what we have going on in this country?
There you go. You've just summed up the entirety of the modern American government.
America!
Until they start calling restrictions on speech a tax, which you know they will at some point. It's a tax on words!
Oh, that's really funny because that almost sounds like a tax.
Oh, I know. I'm hilarious. Okay. Justice Alito, by the way, I just want to read a tiny bit of his opinion because it was so good. He said that he concluded with this. Vetoing speech expressing ideas that offend is not within the government's ken. Speech that demeans on the basis of race, ethnicity, gender, religion, age, disability, or any other similar ground is hateful. But the proudest boast of our free speech jurisprudence is that we protect the freedom to express the thought that we hate. Crazy.
Ayo. Yep.
I wish we could just apply that to everything. Like, carrying guns is dangerous, but blah, 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 blah. Same logic.
Well, they actually have ruled that way, right, Daniel? Like, they have ruled in favor of the Second Amendment pretty much every time it's actually come up, right?
Yes. In those instances, it's always 5-4. But yes, they have the court has ruled broadly to protect the Second Amendment in many cases, which is good. It's just a little more precarious than the First Amendment stuff.
I see. I mean, it's hard to get around, you know, the actual document you're supposed to be interpreting when the document says, like, you're allowed to say what you want, and then the second part is you're allowed to carry a gun. You're allowed to have to, you know, you're allowed to have bare arms. That's
Yeah. And here is getting at Justin's point, like, why don't we have this kind of logic applied to other rights? Although he picked the one where it actually does apply most of the time. But
5-4. It's not a blowout. Come on.
Yeah, and that's still that's still sad that they can't interpret it the way it just says anyway.
I know. In Justice Kennedy's concurring opinion, he wrote some nice things. But then you get this line, which is a nice line, but it's kind of like, well, can we get this regularly, please? Which is, the First Amendment does not entrust that power to the government's benevolence, i.e. the power to protect minority speech, basically is what he's talking about. Does not entrust that power to the government's benevolence. Instead, our reliance must be on the substantial safeguards of a free and open discussion in a democratic society. Can we not apply that logic across the board? Please.
I actually don't even understand that logic. I didn't follow that.
Well, he's saying that we can't trust that the government's going to be benevolent with speech, so we have to say they can't control speech.
Yes.
Oh, duh.
But the fact that he would even say that the government could possibly be benevolent shows his perspective on government.
Yeah, like it's like he doesn't even understand the whole idea of a constitution. Like, the fact that that needs to be stated is like something that a high schooler would write in his essay. Like, oh, it turns out that we need explicit limitations on the government because otherwise it'll just do whatever the fuck it wants.
Right. Huh. He's not starting from the perspective that government necessarily is going to be controlling people.
Well, this is coming from the same justice whose opinion in the gay marriage case, whose legal opinion amounted to "it's time," which is whether or not you agree with the ruling or not, "it's time" is not a legal argument.
It's not an argument.
He also wrote "love is love is love."
Also not an argument. So he's just making Twitter arguments now. Awesome.
But
did he also say "love wins" at some point?
He said hashtag I'm with the gays.
Yeah.
But in other Supreme Court news, this is not a full story, but he may retire this summer.
Oh, God.
There'll be another Supreme Court fight, it looks like. But if Kennedy retires, he's the swing vote. That would mean that the quote-unquote conservatives would have a lock on the court for many years to come. So that would be an interesting shift in jurisprudence. But anyway, speaking of shifts, Gal Gadot's reported $300,000 paycheck for Wonder Woman seems to be a bit of a shifty story.
Ooh.
I'm the best at this.
I see what you did there.
Yes. Thanks to a poorly sourced news story, the power of Twitter to make something go viral, and the erotic allure of online outrage, an urban legend was born on Tuesday morning that the $300,000 Gal Gadot was paid for her starring in Wonder Woman was pennies compared to Henry Cavill's alleged payment of $14 million for 2013's Man of Steel. It all began with Lauren Douche. Oh, I'm sorry, Duca. Duki. Duca? Ducha. Anyway, she's a columnist at Team Vogue.
This was fine.
She tweeted the following. Gal Gadot made $300,000 for Wonder Woman as compared to Henry Cavill's $14 million for Man of Steel. The most compelling DC villain is the pay gap. Of course, this was retweeted a gajillion times, except the problem is it's insanely poorly sourced, and Henry Cavill did not make $14 million for Man of Steel. In fact, he probably made, guess what? About $300,000, which is, in fact, what Gal Gadot made for Wonder Woman. And it turns out this isn't even all that uncommon. Chris Evans was paid $300,000 to star in Captain America the First Avenger.
And that was too much for that shit show of a movie.
Yeah, Jesus, yeah. They should have taken money away from him.
He should have been fined for starring in
the movie. I mean, actually, he did fine. It was the rest of the movie that was garbage.
And Chris Hemsworth. Chris Hemsworth was paid $150,000 for appearing in Thor.
That's more about on target.
So, Justin, how did this... Is this just, you know, the social justice folks looking for any angle to attack not only men, but DC?
That's exactly what it is. It's looking for, okay, now we have our in with DC, right? And this is something that I'm watching very closely. I'm watching how Wonder Woman is performing at the box office, because right now Wonder Woman is performing about the same as every other DC movie. So there's basically a range of what DC movies have made so far money-wise, both in America and worldwide. And Wonder Woman has had a bit more staying power than all the other DC movies have. They've had big drop-offs, but Wonder Woman's still in that range. But there's this cultural myth right now that Wonder Woman is this great, amazing movie and so much better than all the other DC movies. And now they're using this as the foothold to get everything they're trying to say across. Their social justice points and also their points about DC. And that's basically what this is. And we see how this operates now, where they just find something to latch onto and they run with it because it fits their narrative. And that's really the scary thing that I see, is that it's just all about narratives, where these people get these ideas in their head, and if it fits the narrative, it's automatically true. And then if you disagree with it, you're an idiot, and there's no way around that. I mean, that's why you can't even have conversations about things anymore, because it's just, oh, well, obviously this is true. We don't even have to think about it.
The other element, not only was this a poorly sourced story tweeted out by an irresponsible journalist, but now I assume that I will meet people in the future who will say things like, didn't you hear that Gal Gadot only got paid $300K and Henry Cavill got paid $14 million because they read a headline or her tweet? Like, it's annoying that this false story is going to have more impact than the retraction, basically. That the lie will travel farther than the truth. That's what's annoying about it to me.
Well, yeah, we've seen that about all the DC films. I mean, that's how the whole idea of it not being fun got started, or being dark, or being the murderverse. People don't read the stories. They read the headlines. They read the stuff that fits what they already think, or what they think they're supposed to think, and then they just run with it. And that's what I'm talking about with this whole Wonder Woman myth thing. Don't get me wrong. It's an enjoyable movie. It's a good movie. I'm glad I saw it. But when you look at that, it's the same story as Man of Steel. And by the way, you know, I talked about pushback at the top of the show and about not getting traction. When I shared that, and just specifically when I shared it on Reddit to try and get some traction, everyone just told me I was stupid and it was obvious. And they're like, oh, that's just the hero's journey. Or, oh, you're just cherry picking things out in any movie you could do that with. And that's the whole thing. Like, you can't get past that. They're just reading whatever already fits their bias. They're just reading the headlines and they're just regurgitating. And this is what passes nowadays as cultural commentary and movie analysis and story analysis.
Yeah, it's pretty shitty.
And I mean, this whole wage gap thing. I'm standing in line at the pizza place last night. So there's a pizza place down the street from Disneyland, which is really good. I really like it a lot. And I figured, you know, if I go there at 7:30, the line's not going to be long because Disney doesn't close till like 9, 10 o'clock. I got there and I was so hungry and the line was so long that I just stood in line for like 45 minutes. It was like another ride at Disneyland and I didn't even go to Disneyland. But I got there and I was like, should I stand in line? I'm just going to stand in line. But I was standing in line behind these girls, and I think they were in college. I couldn't really tell because of the way they were talking versus the way they looked as well. They looked pretty young. But just the things they were talking about. And at one point, they were just mocking somebody. And I don't know if it was a guy or a girl. I'm assuming it was a guy. They were like, yeah, he said that the wage gap was a myth and there was no wage gap. And we just laughed at him and told him to leave us alone. And it's just like, this is what happens with these people. Like, they don't care about the statistics or anything. How much has this been repeated over the past few years on the internet about the wage gap, and now this is just something that people accept?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, you even hear the president, well, not the former president Obama, just saying it, just as though it's just, yeah, it's accepted fact, which is really funny to me. I guess it shouldn't be.
Well, it is. It is funny in a way. It's funny in a tragic way that the president would just repeat that, because it's so contextless, right? I mean, the idea that, okay, we're just going to look at an hourly rate and everyone should make the same hourly rate. Like, how can you be the president of the United States and not have contextual thinking? And that's really what's going on with all of this, is there's no contextual thinking. I mean, even the idea that every story should be fun, just like Marvel is, or have punchlines like Marvel. I mean, that was the biggest problem with Guardians of the Galaxy, right? Everything was no context. We're just going to end in a punchline no matter what. It's all the same thing. And that's insane, too, that we can connect, or maybe I'm just insane, that I can connect girls in front of me in line at the pizza place with movie analysis, with cultural commentary on equal pay between men and women.
And the fact that jet fuel doesn't melt steel beams.
Well, does Tom Brady factor into this somehow, too?
Did you say it's concrete-bound mentality? Is that what you were saying, James? I didn't hear you.
Oh, no, no, no. I was asking, like, does Tom Brady also factor into this? Is there a way we can connect this to Tom Brady?
Well, I mean, yeah, with the fact, I mean, it's the same as Daniel was just saying. Now we're going to have to hear for the rest of our lives that Tom Brady deflated footballs, because there are people who just read the headlines and they didn't actually look into the science of it or anything. It's the same thing.
Or they
Look, this is how the left wins. This is how these people win. This is how social justice has gotten a hold in this society, is they know there are two things. Most people are, one, either lazy, or two, either too involved with whatever they're doing on their own and not giving a shit. So they don't look into these things. So what they do is they create a loud drone that's repeated over and over again so that enough people hear it that it becomes accepted as true. Then they shove down our throats cultural relativism and social construction. So they say, oh, well, everyone believes it, so it must be true. This is how they win. This is how they get a foothold. That's what "it's time" means.
That's right. I
agree that all – yes, and I agree that all of those things are happening, but – those things are always the case, Justin. So, like, what's different now? You know, the fact that people have, you know, people have had, now with the internet, people have more time than ever to actually make up their minds in a, you know, a patient, logical way on these issues and to sort through the lies. Not that it's their responsibility to do so, but, like, it's more available at any time now. Why is it getting worse? And I think it's – I mean, I don't think it's so much because, you know, that people's time is limited. And it's more that people are not willing to police their own side nearly – I mean, even 10 years ago, it was at least done somewhat. Now it's basically both sides just double down and they don't police their own side at all, except for, like, Sam Harris and Ben Shapiro. That's about it.
I mean, there's elements of that. There's also elements of the narcissism in our culture now, brought about by social media, where everyone has to have a hot take on everything. So rather than actually think things through and take the time to think things through, you immediately have to respond. I mean, that's one of my biggest problems with Twitter culture, is anything that happens, everyone has to immediately tweet a joke about it or tweet some sort of incisive commentary that everyone's going to agree with. And I mean, that's what this tweet was. This woman needed to say something to get attention about these movies. And she was like, what's the angle no one else has taken? Oh, it's the wage gap. I'm going to use that. And that's why she tweeted it.
And then enough people echoed it.
Right. Because other people wanted to be involved with it as well.
Here's the real question. How do you pronounce Gal Gadot's last name?
Godot?
Prince.
Because I've been hearing lately that it's Gadot and not Godot, because she's Israeli.
Yeah, Ben Shapiro pronounces it Gadot.
Yeah. So that's really the issue here, is we're being sexist by saying Godot.
That's true.
And waiting for her to make one.
Someone had to make that joke.
I was going to say waiting for her to correct us.
That would have been a better joke. Speaking of better jokes, why men are truly the weaker sex?
Women
being less emotional to having stronger muscles, a new book reveals tantalizing research that defies conventional wisdom. This is in the Daily Mail. For millennia, it has been the dividing line in the battle of the sexes. Women may be better at multitasking, less susceptible to, quote, man flu,
and
did
safer... Did you say multipassing? Women are better at multipassing?
That's right, especially Lilu Dallas. Less susceptible to man flu and safer behind the wheel. How fucking dare they? But physically, men are the stronger sex. And no wonder. On average, males are 6 inches taller and females have twice the upper body strength than females, as well as denser bones, stronger tendons, and greater muscles. However, this could be about to change. How could facts of reality be about to change? Like, all of a sudden. Anyway, we find out now. Continuing the quote. For a growing body of scientific study is turning centuries-old gender research on its head by suggesting women that are in fact stronger than men. And this is where it gets farcical. We often think of males as being the tougher and more powerful sex, explains Angela Sani, author of Inferior, a groundbreaking new book which charts the scientists' findings. But strength can be defined in several ways. When it comes to the most basic instinct of all, survival, women's bodies tend to be better equipped than men's. Huh. For longevity and surviving illness to coping with trauma and managing pain, we investigate the surprising ways in which women really are the stronger sex. Justin, I was so disappointed by this article. Because the whole setup was like, we have science now proving that women are stronger, and they talk about all the ways in which men are stronger. They're taller, they have more upper body strength, denser bones, stronger tendons. And it's like, but new research is revealing that these things could be turned on their heads. But the revelation was, we're going to change the way we define strength. That was the fucking revelation of this article. We're going to change the way we define the word we've been leading you up to this point. What the fuck?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what they do with everything, isn't it? Isn't that what I was just saying about cultural relativism and social constructionism and everything? It's the same thing. Oh, well, we're just going to change it, and then we'll repeat it enough, and then, you know, enough stupid girls in line at the pizza place will go, yeah, and then he said men are stronger, and I just got angry at him and told him to go away. And this is how they do things. Eat your pizza and shut the fuck up. Like, seriously.
It's almost as though in science, you have to fully define the context of your generalization before making it and fully understanding it. Someone should write a book about that.
That's hate speech, James. That's hate speech.
I mean, really? They're also saying women are stronger because they can put up with more inane bullshit that doesn't matter? I mean, that's the point we're at now. Like, everyone knows that that's what women do. They just go on about inane shit that doesn't matter and make up problems, and that makes them stronger? We're weaker because we don't have time for your bullshit? Okay, fine.
Yes. Okay. I don't know where we want to go with this article in particular. I have a particular angle that I want to go to, which is to mock social justice people in a completely different way, which is, I loved this part of it, which is about advantage girls even in the womb. So this section goes... Boys are bigger and grow faster in the womb, which can place a strain on the placenta and lead to undernourishment of the fetus and high blood pressure in the mother. Angela Sine says, quote, with female fetuses, the placenta does more to maintain the pregnancy and increase immunity against infections. Why is this? Nobody understands. What I want to know is how the placenta knows how the baby identifies.
Oh!
Because if there's no biological difference between men and women, why would the placenta treat men differently than women? Just curious. Anyone?
I have no answer to that question because that's something I always say. I mean, you know how I turned on trans people earlier this year on this podcast, and that's a great point. They keep making – everything's contradictory. They keep making contradictions in all their findings. So now this is to make women stronger, but what it actually does is undermine trans people.
Science undermines people who are faking reality. More at six. Yes.
I mean, isn't the broader point here that we need to stop fucking comparing the sexes? And what I mean by that is, aren't men stronger in some ways and women stronger in different ways?
It just, yes, but all I wanted from this article was a sort of upfront about what they're talking about, right? Because they begin the whole thing with men are 6 inches taller, have more muscle and whatever, and have thus been considered stronger. But if you don't think of strength as anything having to do with actual strength, then women are stronger. It's like, okay, but just can we just define our terms here and stop making up bullshit? But
well, they give a whole list.
Yeah, but the article leads you to believe that we're talking about strength. It's a woman holding up a man in the picture.
Yeah.
The whole article revolves around the concept of physical strength until they completely take that rug out from under
you. So it's a Lion King picture?
Yes, that's right. But
I have a question about this article. Maybe you could answer it for me.
Okay.
What the hell is man flu?
Man flu.
Yeah, seriously, yeah, they just talk about that like, oh yeah, of course, man flu. What?
Like everyone knows who it is. Is it an Asian goatee style?
Good one. No, I believe what it is. I'm not 100% sure what they're referring to, but I've heard it used in the sense it's like when a man gets a cold, he becomes like a crippled baby. Like he can't do anything or, you know, move or whatever. But when a woman gets a cold, she still has to take care of the kids and whatever.
What?
I think that's what they're talking about.
That's never been true to me in my life.
I know. I've also never had that experience ever, yet that is a cultural meme.
The only thing that's ever had me laid up and couldn't move and felt like I was dying is food poisoning. That's it. And even then, I laid there in bed by myself for 48 hours and nobody helped me. And then I was just like, oh, I'm better now. And then I left. Like, never have I had a cold and been like, I can't do anything now. In fact, if I have a cold, it makes me work harder to fight the cold. Like, I'll go to the gym to knock the cold out.
Knock it out. That's right. I'm not sure your science is sound there. You'd have to ask James, but...
I don't know. I've done that before. I don't... Yeah.
I'm not saying that's logical. I'm just saying
I don't know if it's logical either. I'm just saying I've done it too. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not like, oh, this will work. It's like, oh, I feel like I'm really weak right now. I'm going to go do something to make me feel strong.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It just makes you feel a little better in general. So.
Yeah.
The other sort of meta thought I had about reading this article is, was it a couple weeks ago when we were talking about like feminists constantly screaming that it's not about making men smaller or demoralizing. It's about bringing women up. And then I read... Men truly are the weaker sex, and all I could think of was like, really?
That we talked about a few weeks ago, there was a comment I read about someone saying that men have been in charge for like 300 years or something, so now women should be in charge for 300 years. And that's really the subversive approach, the subversive goal of the feminist movement that no one wants to talk about. It's not about equality. It's about tearing men down so women can have the power. And this is what I've been saying about all of these things for a long time. Anyone who's complaining about the power gap or things like this, they don't want to actually have equality. They just want power so they can oppress the way they feel like they've been oppressed. And they would just never say that because you can't say that rhetorically because no one's going to give you power. But that's all it's about. They have this mindset of oppressor, oppressee, and they feel like they've been the oppressee, so they want to be the oppressor now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's literally all it is.
Didn't Ayn Rand say something like that, James? Isn't there some quote where it's like, if you hear someone speaking of masters and slaves, you can be well sure that they want to be the master?
That's definitely what's going on here. But something I'll add is that I think it's dangerous to accept the idea that what they're doing is wrong, but the notion of equality is right, because men and women can't be equal. They're different in, you know, a number of ways, and we shouldn't focus on those ways. But like, but I guess in today's day and age, we kind of have to. We have to point this out and say, look, if you're trying to make it equal, you're really going to end up treating one side unfairly. Because if you notice that men make more money than women and you try to shift that, you're necessarily going to be like being unfair to men, because the way we do things makes it so that men earn more money. So if you make it so they end up getting the same amount, that's unfair. So we need to, I think we need to reject this language of equal. Maybe we can talk about equal rights. We can talk about, you know, recognition of equal intelligence, but we can't talk about generally equal, because I think that's sort of the way they kind of got us onto this insane track.
Yeah, it's an equivocation with equal and the sameness. I mean, we saw this with the story a few weeks ago about genitalia and gender. No, men and women are not the same, and I would like my woman to have, and my women to have vaginas, please.
Real ones or fake ones?
No, real ones.
Oh, okay. Just being clear.
That was the trans story a few episodes ago.
Speaking of real vaginas and having sex with them.
That's right. Speaking of that, a new study, so you know it must be true, says that Republicans are having more sex than Democrats. Yes, a study conducted by Professor Nicholas H. Wolfinger examined the sex lives of Democrats, Republicans, and independents. Turns out independents and Republicans are more likely to have sex at least once a week than their Democrat peers, the study shows. Quote, "This finding left me curious about how specific components of relational bliss might be affected by political leanings. The answer is surprising. Republicans have more sex than Democrats and cheat less on their spouses. Political independents have sex more often than Republicans, but cheat at the same rate that Democrats do," Wolfinger said. What can account for this? Well, it's most likely because Republicans are more likely to be married than Democrats. But that doesn't, that was their explanation, but that didn't make sense when they then said that independents are having more sex than Republicans. Well, they're not more likely to be married than Republicans.
No, so. They said independents are having more sex than Democrats.
But they're having the most, political independents have sex even more often than Republicans, it says.
Oh, okay. I misread.
Yeah. How dare you.
Yeah.
I just kind of find it funny to imagine all of these different people from political parties having sex, like categorizing sex by political party is just kind of funny to me.
It is a weird, cross-section here. It's kind of strange. So Justin, is this true in your experience? Are you having sex with Republicans?
I plead the fifth. I don't know how to answer that question. Like, I mean, it explains why I'm not really having sex out here because it's a bunch of fucking liberals out here. I mean, here's the thing about this story. It says, right, it's not what you would think, right? You would think the left is having more sex, right? The Democrats are having more sex.
Right.
But the question is, why would we think that? Well, because we've been raised on this myth, this idea that the Democrats are sex positive, and I'm using that term very intentionally, and the right and Republicans are sex negative. Would you guys say that that's fair, that that's what we've been brought up on?
Yeah, for sure.
But sure. Let me just posit this very quickly. Just, you know, this is just an inductive thing. This is, I don't have any data, scientific evidence to back this up. It's just a basic logical induction. If you have to run around and say you are positive and supportive of something, are you really supportive of that thing, or are you trying to convince yourself you're supportive of that thing? Like, do I run around all day and call myself Tom Brady positive?
I may not use those words. I think I see what you're getting at. And then I get to pull out the P word, which is psychologizing.
Oh, I'm totally psychologizing right now. But the point I'm making is this study just backs up something that maybe we should have already thought about. Maybe the left is running around and all these people are running around with sex because they're the ones who have issues with it. They're the ones who have problems with it. It's the same thing where these people talk about, like, the degradation of relationships and dating. Well, who are the people who have the most trouble dating are the ones who complain about it the most. Yeah. They were the ones causing the problems, and then they're saying that there are problems with everyone else. Well, maybe you're the problem, and it's the same thing here. Look at we see this in the feminist movement, right? Look at who the women are that are complaining that, you know, women aren't being treated fairly in regards to sex and that, you know, men are shallow and everything. Well, it's not the ones who are attractive. It's the same concept.
You sound like Rush Limbaugh 20 years ago.
Well, you know, I don't want to like make it seem like a right wing show, but Rush Limbaugh's not all that right anymore. I mean, in right wing anymore. He's not really in line with the conservative base anymore, is he?
It's very fractured base at the moment. So.
Right. But the point I'm making is I don't want to sound like I'm shilling for the Republicans here. I don't want to sound like that at all. I'm just saying culturally, I think it makes more sense than we'd ever care to admit because, again, these repeated myths have told us that the right is anti-sex and the left is pro-sex, but everything in the left's behavior demonstrates that they're anti-sex. Similarly, and this is more psychologizing, but whatever, I'm just going to roll with it because I don't give a fuck. How can you have an anti-life philosophy and be pro-sex? Isn't sex the celebration of life? I enjoy you and you enjoy me, so let's fuck the shit out of each other. Like, you can't do that on the left if you hate yourself and hate everybody. You simply can't.
First of all, that's one of the best lines from Atlas Shrugged is, I enjoy life, you enjoy life, so let's fuck the shit out of each other. I'm pretty sure that's what, Reardon said to Dagny at one point.
That's my loose translation line. And loose summary of Francisco's sex speech.
And then right. The romantic violins play. Was there a second to that, James? You said first.
Oh, yeah. What's interesting... What I find interesting about this is I don't think this necessarily shows that like Republicans are actually particularly pro-sex. I think they're just as anti-sex as we always suspected. What we're learning here is we're getting a little bit of evidence that despite how anti-sex religion is, feminism and ideas associated with liberalism, there's evidence that it's much worse. It's much more unhealthy for sex.
Yeah. All I could think of when I read this study was actually a meme, Justin, which would basically have this study and then something like libertarians be like dot 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 and then just a picture of an orgy.
Yeah, I wanted to know how libertarians. Yeah,
I'd be curious to know about not just independence. That's very broad and stupid. I'd be curious to know about libertarians in particular. I know a lot of these libertarian conferences are pretty much sex fests. So. Anyway,
guess I got to go to a libertarian conference.
Freedom Fest coming up. I'm not going, but it's coming up.
Or Pork Fest.
It's in the name.
Yeah. Poke Fest.
Because you know OCON isn't a sex fest.
It's also in the name.
Oh.
Thank you.
All right, I think we've reached this natural conclusion. Does anyone else have anything you want to add about
we've reached climax. The natural climax of the sex story?
Yes.
That's all.
Now let's have some pillow romantic talk.
Gross. Oh.
It's time for The Hopeful Romantic with JML. Put me into syndication. Broadcast to a network station of people viewing their favorite episodes. I can't. To start this week, I just want to give a brief review of the entirety of Bates Motel. This does not mean I'm going to be analyzing all of Bates Motel right now. I finally, because I had a lot of free time, watched all of season 5 of Bates Motel, the last season. This is a show by Carlton Cuse, one of my favorite television EPs and writers. And it's the prequel, or was the prequel. It passes Psycho in season 5. It started as the prequel to Psycho about the Norman Bates origin story. What I will say about this show is, if you are sick of television shows not having a good ending, a good finale... And I don't just mean that from a technical, pragmatic storyline approach. I also mean that from a thematic approach. This show has a payoff. It has an ending. It was clear there was a plan from the beginning. It's 10 episodes per season. And it gets stronger as it goes because you can tell they knew where they were going and they were building. I think this show is one of the most underrated shows that have come out in the past 20 years or so. And it's worth your time watching it. The one thing I will say is... certain people are not going to like it just because it's dark. That's all. It's just a dark show because it's about somebody going crazy and killing people.
Good times. Good date show.
Yes. I find it's good to go on a date or bring a girl over, a woman over, to watch Bates Motel, because really it's about how Norman can't deal with sex and starts killing women he's sexually attracted to. So,
So it's a millennial story.
Well, I mean, there's a lot thematically here, millennial. I mean, there's a lot about the relationship between the mother and the son and how they don't ever cut the cord. He doesn't individuate and they're so connected. And how that relationship fucks up his psychology. There's a lot there. So it's very interesting from that perspective as well.
Trailer takedown. First trailer.
Midnighters is a movie directed by one of the directors from The Walking Dead. It starts out at a New Year's Eve party, and this couple that I think we're supposed to assume is very, very happy ends up pulling I Know What You Did Last Summer. And what I mean by that is they hit some guy with their car. You know, they didn't see him. He came out of nowhere. They're driving in the woods, and they hit the guy with their car. And then rather than call the police, they decide, oh, we're going to take the body with us back to our garage.
Of course.
But then, because that's what you do, you know, when a random guy shows up in the middle of the night. And I'm going to ask you this legally, Daniel, and I'll give the rest of the summary in a second. But you don't have to answer this question until after I finish the summary. But when I throw it to you, answer the question of if you would go to jail or get in trouble if some guy jumped in your car jumped in front of your car in the woods in the middle of the night in the dark and you hit him and he died, if you would get in trouble for that. That's what I want to know. But anyway, so the rest of the trailer is when they get him home, they find out that he had their address in his pocket, so he was going to their house. And then the police and everyone starts to investigate, and it's all the very muted, very underspoken, like, oh my God, we know what you did, and we're going to tear you down for this.
Mm-hmm. Probably not.
So the whole movie just kind of cut off at the knees.
Obviously, the exceptions would be if they're radically drunk, or if they were doing something particularly erratic, like driving all over the road for fun or something like that. They could be in trouble. Even in those cases, unless you were like smash drunk and you had some kind of malice or some sort of ill intent, you're not going to get jail time.
Wouldn't it be hard to? How do you prove that you made that it was they who made the mistake and not you? Oh, I guess you could show that the guy was standing in the middle of the road on a narrow road, like at night, you'd have to also somehow
show that.
How
do you prove the opposite? If they were driving erratically, how do you prove that?
Well, I mean, let's say that the trailer is totally different and the guy's wearing like a bright orange safety vest and he has a blinker on his back to indicate that, you know, he's walking in the middle of the night or whatever.
I've seen that before.
And they are smashed drunk and they are driving erratically to have fun and they're having sex at the same time in the car and they hit him. You would be in a lot of trouble in that scenario. The trailer is unequivocally not that, to be clear.
Doesn't this say something about the trailer that we find this legal discussion more interesting than the content of the fictional film?
Well, because the whole premise of the movie is based on this one decision.
Yeah.
That's the problem with the movie. I mean, look, the idea that they kill this guy and then they bring him home and they find their address in his pocket, that's interesting to me. Oh shit, we accidentally killed this guy and then he's already coming to our house and we don't know who he is? Like, that's intriguing.
Yeah, that's a swing and a miss. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that, like, the second half of the trailer had an interesting story, but then I couldn't get past the fact that all the actors are terrible.
Yeah.
they have no emotional sense whatsoever. They all seem like sociopaths.
Yeah.
So, tackle.
Tackle.
Yeah, it seems like a good idea at parts. But they didn't execute it well enough. Tackle.
Tackle.
Yeah, totally agree. Tackle.
Tackle. Second trailer.
The only living boy in New York, and we will talk about why they use the word living, because I found that very interesting, is about a young man who is pursuing this girl, and then in his pursuit of this girl, he finds out that his father, played by Pierce Brosnan, is cheating on his mother with a woman played by Kate Beckinsale, but then he starts pursuing Kate Beckinsale, which you can't really blame him for. But then the girl he was originally pursuing is then jealous of him pursuing Kate Beckinsale. I think that's the plot of the movie.
Forgot the part where the dude is just egging him on the entire time. Oh, you should do this manipulative thing. You should fuck that woman too. Like you should do. Like he's just whispering in his ear this entire preview, telling him to do this shit.
Yeah, it's basically the anti-Jiminy Cricket.
Yeah. By the way, the guy you're referring to is Jeff Bridges, which is of course it's Jeff Bridges being the dick. But That's right. By the way, I just want to make a point, just a broader cultural point, before we move on to talk about this movie a little bit. This is why I have a hard time with the difference between girl and woman and when to use it. Because to me, it's very clear in this movie that Kate Beckinsale is a woman. And the friend that the main guy is pursuing is a girl. Like when you compare those two and stand them next to each other. But both of them are older than 18. I mean, the girl is probably in her mid-20s, correct?
Sure, I guess.
Right. This is why I have a very hard time with the use of, because how do I differentiate between a Kate Beckinsale and I don't remember this actress's name. I believe she's going to play Iris in the Flash movie.
You could say the hot one and the not one.
But she's cute though. I mean, she's not hot. It's not an issue of attractiveness. It's just like, to me, one is very clearly a woman and one is very clearly a girl.
Yeah, that's not good.
No. Doesn't the like context have a lot to do with this? Like in a certain movie, a character might be the hero, but then, you know, if you put that character next to Han Solo, you'd say Han Solo's clearly the hero and then this weaker man is the sidekick in comparison.
Are you talking about Luke Skywalker right now?
I could have been, actually. That fits perfectly into what I just said. Yes.
Yeah, and that's a fair point. And that's part of what's going on. I mean, now that's a brilliant segue into talking about this. The only living boy in New York. And then, you know, they draw a contrast between the two women he's interested in, and they make one seem like a girl. That's clearly very intentional on the part of the artist, I would say.
Yeah. I think it is, especially, well, I mean, the guy, the main character looks very young. He looks very idealistic. He has the round glasses.
Yeah, that's how you know.
So it's supposed to be a coming of age story, just in a completely different context, in a very, I don't know, they're trying to make it a New York context, which is weird to me. But there was some stuff that was appealing about this trailer, I guess. Actually, I thought when the music kicked in that it was the darkest movie Woody Allen has ever done.
I did get Woody Allen vibes from this movie.
I really thought it was a Woody Allen movie. But ultimately, I'm not sure I could watch this. There's something intriguing. I take it back. If this was on Hulu and I'd watched everything else on Hulu, I might watch this.
If you'd watched all the seasons of Love Connections already, you would watch this.
Yes, that's right. If I had finished Orange is the New Black on Netflix, I might turn to this.
Oh,
that's right. So I don't know. This is it's basically a tackle for me.
Tackle.
Because of I don't know because of hipsterism. I have no idea because of why. I had a horrible emotional reaction to this trailer, and I also want to know why Jeff Bridges is now confined to playing older characters who sit on things and give cryptic yet horrible advice. That is his character in every movie now. Sit down, be an old guy, and give cryptic, terrible advice to this young person.
He's okay. Just like a chill version of Iago, basically.
So to give you a little funny about the talent behind the camera, the writer is known for movies such as Collateral Beauty, Here Comes the Boom, starring Kevin James. If you remember, that was the Kevin James becomes an MMA fighter movie. Rock of Ages, Just Go With It, the Wall Street sequel. So this is a guy who's written a lot of sort of romantic comedies or just sort of studio schlock. And then this is also directed by the guy who did the two Spider-Man reboot movies, Mark Webb. So the talent behind the camera does not seem to match the talent in front of the camera.
Yeah. That's weird.
So for me, because of those two people involved, there's a lot of intriguing things. It's like I said, the use of the word living, that he's the only living boy. The idea that they're saying that in a positive way and he's the character who seems to be trying to figure out how to live in a healthy way. I like that thematically, philosophically, but I have to tackle because of all the people involved.
Tackle.
You're saying a lot of the positive things that I was subconsciously noting, Justin, but just to give a really different take on this, is it just me or do movies like this really strike you as like none of these characters do any productive work in their life whatsoever? Like that, I don't know. Maybe do you know what I'm talking about? Just like a lot of romantic comedies are like this, where it's like all that's given to their productive work is just like, oh, he's an engineer. And then that's it. Like that's all you hear about the fact that they're. And so in the meantime, all we do is we see them lounging around and walking around to bars and stuff like this. And I just, for some reason, lose all respect for the characters and I don't care about them anymore. Maybe that's just me. That's not a very good way to be. Maybe I'm being a little naturalistic there, but that always occurs to me. It's just like what do these people even do? Like, for all I know, they're just bums. Like, it's and funny. I don't care about them.
There might be something in particular about this trailer, because one of my early thoughts in this trailer was literally, what do these people do?
Yeah.
Like, other than sit around and be New Yorkers.
Exactly. Exactly.
And I don't, maybe it's just something about the way it was presented that sort of made me think of that, but oh, strange.
It is a bit naturalistic, but what I think you guys are really latching onto is the disintegrated nature of the character construction. And what I mean by that is healthy, productive people do not act like these people act. I mean, this is the Sex and the City phenomenon. We're supposed to believe that the women in that show were successful women in New York City. But all they did was prattle on about nonsense and act in an immature manner. That's disintegrated. It doesn't work like that. Those aren't well-drawn characters.
Yeah, we simply can't believe that these people are acting like this in their social life, and then they're turning around and going to work and doing something meaningful. Like, we simply cannot, and that's what me and Daniel are sort of noticing subconsciously.
Right. You don't have to show them working, but you have to show that they're the type of people who are able to do productive work. But I will say this in defense of the trailer, the girl he was originally pursuing, the younger woman, does say to him, you know, you're trying not to be like your family, but you're turning into them. So the trailer does seem to be self-aware of that to a certain level.
Yeah.
If anything, this is making our case for tackling seem weaker because you've pointed out some interesting things here.
Right, but at least they're showing that perhaps he's trying to get past that sense of, you know, banality. Maybe, probably not, though. Tackle.
I guess I'd put it above Orange is the New Black.
Yeah, I know. It's certainly, I don't think it's naturalistic. I don't think its intent is to be naturalistic. I just think that, I don't know. I'm just not interested in a story where, like, hey, that's my dad's mistress. Oh, I'm going to fuck my dad's mistress. Like, it seems more like a porn fantasy than it does, like, a movie storyline.
Oh, God.
Like, it gave me more jerk-off material to be like, yeah, my dad's mistress is Kate Beckinsale, and I'm going to fuck Kate Beckinsale. Like, she'd rather be with me because I'm younger and more virile. Although,
oh, man, daddy issues.
But when your dad's James Bond, can you really say that? Like,
that's true.
Well, maybe he'll like be giving you instructions or something.
Shaken, not stirred.
Final trailer.
Marshall is a trailer I included just for you, Daniel. So this is a biopic of sorts. So we started with a Supreme Court case, and here's more Supreme Court case, sort of. This is about Thurgood Marshall, and it's very much done like an action movie, and it's very confusing for me, because it's like here, like the first scene especially is very much an action scene, like here's Thurgood Marshall, and he's a badass, and he'll beat you up, And now he's gonna beat up the country's culture by fighting for black rights as the first black lawyer anyone cares about. And then they bring in Josh Gad, who's like the, here's the white guy who's kind of a wuss and a beta, and he becomes the beta to this alpha, and then he gets beat up, and it's like, now you're black too! It's like, I don't think it works that way. I think he's still white. Pretty sure.
He's still pretty Jewy. Yeah.
So, yeah, that's my summary of this trailer. To be more serious, this seems to be a biopic about Thurgood Marshall, the first black Supreme Court justice.
And you thought I would like this because I work nominally in the law.
No, I just included it because I wanted to see what you said about it.
You're basically
a lawyer.
This
at all. I thought you'd hate this.
I wouldn't hate this if the marketing was different, I think. And maybe that goes back to the stylization all the way back into the directing. I don't know what's in the actual film, but like one of the things that I don't like is using like modern music in a period piece.
I liked that in this.
I don't like it. And it's not that it's disintegrated necessarily. It's just like it's so obvious to me. Like it's like a pridefully obvious presentation where it's like, oh, look how progressive we are. We're using rap music in this period piece about Thurgood Marshall.
Because he's black.
Yes. I mean, I don't know much about Thurgood Marshall, but he was a little bit classical in a certain sense. And I think he would have been appalled by rap music, by the way.
Mm.
So I don't know that sort of stylization and then making it almost like an action film. It's a little strange. You could do a very serious piece about Thurgood Marshall's life that could be a real tearjerker and have some really phenomenal stories in it. But to make it, you know, like, do you remember what they did with Sherlock Holmes a while ago with Robert Downey Jr.?
Where they
made it like
God.
An action film.
Yeah, because it was Guy Ritchie, and that's what he does.
That's how I feel. That's what sort of like what this movie feels like to me, where it's like, this is unnecessary. This guy is so impressive already that you didn't need to make him beat the fuck out of people. Like, tackle.
So I'm going to ask you a question, yeah. Daniel, when you're talking about the music.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think it's kind of the Snyder effect, you know, where people talk shit about Snyder, but he has this effect on Hollywood that people don't want to admit. The use of, like, Sweet Dreams in Sucker Punch, the opening, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that one of the strengths of it? And isn't that a period piece in a way that it's shot? So what would you say, and I already know the answer, I'm just leading you to answer this question. What would you say the difference is between Snyder's use of pop music and remixing of it? I mean, I don't know if you guys ever looked at it, but I shared an article he actually wrote for MTV News in the thread earlier this week, and I'll share it publicly on the Welcome to Midside Facebook page this coming week. He wrote it about how he used Lounge Against the Machine, Richard Cheese's band, in Dawn of the Dead, and why he picked them. What about his use of pop music in that way, especially in a period piece where, you know, Sucker Punch is clearly supposed to have more of like a 50s vibe almost to it with the way it's shot, or at least the asylum part of it is. What's the difference there? Is it simply that it's fictional?
So there is some element of fictional that I'm okay with, but I think there are two differences. One is I'm not sure I would characterize it as a period piece. So that's one. That's something we'd have to hash out later. I don't want to get into that now.
I was more talking about the aesthetic, but I get what you're saying.
Yeah, but two is there's a certain way in which Snyder is appropriating music to bring out a particular theme or a concept. If they took rap music and like appropriated it in a completely different way, they stylized it. They took out an element that they were trying to draw to connect it with some theme of the movie, I probably would be less angry about it. But it's just when you just put a straight rap song over a movie about a black guy from the early 1920s, like, why?
Right, it just seems almost racist in a way.
Yeah.
Indeed. No, and specifically when you're talking about using it for a certain thematic reason, Snyder in the article he wrote that I'm talking about uses the lounge version of Down with the Sickness when the people who are stuck in the mall in Dawn of the Dead and they're doing mundane things. So he was like, it's ironic because you have this song that's originally very aggressive and upbeat, and you're doing a lounge version of it to show that these people are surrounded by a plague that's destroying the world and they're doing these mundane things in the mall. So that's what you're saying, is just simply more integrated.
Yeah, this was, to me, if it's integrated, there was no indication that it was, and it just felt slapped on because we're cool and hip and it's a black guy.
Right, and that's how the whole trailer felt, is it's like, we need to make this black guy cool and hip, rather than the fact just say all the fucking awesome stuff he did. We need to make him a cool, hip action star.
Compare that to, this is the stupid, this is the first example that came to mind, but like Office Space, where you have this group of nerds going out to beat the hell out of a computer and they're playing Gangster's Paradise. Like, there is an integration of a theme there, and it's an ironic one, and it's funny. And I think it's completely appropriate in that context, although it's also not a period piece, but...
So I'm tackling.
Tackle.
Daniel, you already said tackle.
Yeah.
James?
Tackle. I like historical fiction in general, and this... And I actually don't mind the use of music like this. It comes off more to me as almost... romantic in a certain way, because they're merging our modern conception of what that music represents with something that was in the past. That being said, usually when they do this, it doesn't work. Like, We Will Rock You in A Knight's Tale. I just end up really confused at why trumpets are making guitar sounds. So, yeah,
that's actually awesome example of exactly what I don't like. Yes.
So, yeah, like it was a good idea, because it's like, yeah, we're about to have a joust. It's pretty badass. We're gonna play this badass song, but it's just not quite right. It was it's a swing and a miss. But I know it's gonna end up being a miss 90% of the times you do it.
All right. So one last thing here in this section, sort of Snyder related news. It broke that Damon Lindelof, writer of Lost and I guess the show The Leftovers on HBO just ended. I don't know. I didn't watch any of it. Is going to be adapting Watchmen for HBO. Now, okay. I have one thing to say about this story. At least he doesn't have to come up with his own shitty ending this time.
What do we know about this project? They're just going to take a straight adaptation of Watchmen and do a miniseries out of it? Or are they going, is it like set in the world of Watchmen?
No, I think it's just a pure adaptation, a straight adaptation. So I think in contrast to Snyder, who did his own inversion of it at the end, we're going to see a straight adaptation of it. So what I think is going to happen culturally eventually is people will say, this is the Watchmen adaptation we should have done, and it shows what's wrong with Snyder. I imagine that's where the cultural attacks are going to go.
I'm not optimistic that this is going to be good. I don't know.
No, I think it's going to be terrible. The only positive thing that can sort of be said is I don't think a lot of people realize the parallels between Lost and Watchmen. So Lindelof is a big Watchmen fan.
Yeah.
But that's also what's terrifying about it, because that means it's going to be all this negative crap that's in the original story.
Are we still tackling? I'll tackle this.
James, you have anything you want to add?
We already have a really good Watchmen film adaptation. Like, can we do something else? Like, I'm looking forward to HBO doing the Foundation series.
Yeah. Like,
can we get to that?
The Foundation series.
You want to explain what that is really briefly to our audience?
Oh, it's a story about Leonard Peikoff before Leonard Peikoff. Basically, there's this mathematician who's a psycho historian, which means he studies history, but like he's really pissed about it. No, it means he uses mathematics, psychology, and the laws of history, and he has a system that can mathematically predict cultural shifts in large cultures of people. And so, he's made a prediction. His mathematics has come out that the Galactic Empire, which is what's going on in this fictional world, is that humanity has conquered the entire galaxy, and the Galactic Empire will fall within 100 years and lead to a period of like something like 3,000 years of complete darkness and disarray. And so what he does is he starts a planet on the outer rim of the galaxy called Foundation, where all of mankind's knowledge will be stored in hopes that, well, actually not in hopes that, because he has it all worked out mathematically, under math, what he believes mathematically will lead to the resurgence of the galactic culture. And so it's a drama of, on like, on a galactic level of these cultural forces playing out. And it's pretty badass, and I really hope they do end up making that series.
So it's Numbers.
And it's, it's Numbers the movie. Yeah. It's, it's Isaac Asimov, right?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. And it's actually a lot of where Star Wars gets its terminology from, interestingly. Like, I think the term hyperspace is coined.
Right, and atom blaster. Yeah, well, in Star Wars they call them blasters, but in Asimov they're called atom blasters because they have their pistols actually have a miniature nuclear reactor in them, so it just, you know, vaporizes your midsection, basically. You don't get up from that, so that's pretty badass.
That's right.
Did not know they were adapting that, so that sounds like it could be good. Sounds better than Lindelof doing Watchmen.
Way better.
Seriously.
But you know what's worse than either of those? Reddit. So let's go to it. It's time for Reddit on Reddit.
These things are all on Reddit. Mostly pics of felines, comma, boring felines. These things are all on Reddit. No, we didn't post it, but we will repost it.
First, Reddit. And this is from the subreddit 2X Chromosomes. I can't stand the everyone's beautiful mindset in America. I wish girls were taught that it's okay to be average looking or ugly. Now, I want to read a little bit of this post because, you know, the first sentence sounds like sort of we should agree with that. You know, I can't stand the everyone's beautiful mindset in America. But the second line really is elucidated. Did I say that right, Daniel?
It's not elucidated. It can be elucidating.
It can elucidate.
It eludicates.
The post is it eludicates the second line. So
I don't know what you're saying anymore. Just go. Just read it.
I'm being a little glib, but I'm average looking. I've been pretty plain Janey most of my life. That's just part of who I am. I feel like it demeans my experience as a person, and people freak out if I draw any kind of attention to this. If I so much as hint at it, people have to correct me and tell me, don't talk like that, and you're beautiful. When people respond like this, it only makes me feel worse about who I am, not better. It's like an implication that being average-looking is a terrible fate nobody should suffer. It's like they should feel that it's better for me to live in denial than be my authentic self. Just a rant. I figured some of you might relate. Now, she just edits to add in because a lot of people started reading it. And she's like, oh my God, people read my post. So as far as what she said here, wow. I mean, the idea that having an ideal that we strive for is bad is just terrible. I mean, the idea that, you know, we say everyone is beautiful, I believe that that's bad because certain people aren't beautiful and we need to recognize the good and bad. But the point of recognizing that is not to say, oh, you know, it's okay that you're ugly. It's to say, oh, no, we should strive towards being beautiful. Am I wrong here?
I had to let that sink in for a second. James, you have an immediate reaction that's better than my stalling?
This is really muddy for me because I actually find myself actually kind of agreeing with her because Justin, like, maybe she is striving for some kind of higher ideal, but it's just not in the department of appearance. Like, you know, I have a lot of higher ideals, but you know, one of them is not physical, you know, perfection. Like I'm gonna do what I can to be physically healthy and pretty strong, but I'm not gonna be Tom Brady, you know? Like it's just not where I'm completely okay in saying that, like, you know, my appearance is average, or I'm not sure, but I'm not super, I'm not that, you know, concerned with my appearance.
It's the thing I struggle with is that why we treat this so differently from other things that are innate in ourselves that we have little control over. Now, obviously, we have some control over what we look like. There's dressing a certain way. There's doing our hair. There's makeup for women, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
The gym.
But for the most part, or the gym, absolutely.
The food you eat.
Yes, but
there's a lot of things you can do to make yourself look better.
General facial structure, for instance, not a ton you can do outside of surgery.
Yes,
and that's
right.
Sort of like the same capacity argument that you have for, like, well, to use what James just said, athletics. Like someone who's good at football has sort of a natural capacity, but they're never going to be Tom Brady. See if we can use Tom Brady for both looks and ability. It's amazing. but like, imagine if that person said, like, you know, like, oh, I'm never going to be as good as Tom Brady. And people around him like jumped up quickly and was like, oh, no, don't say that. You're just as good as Tom Brady. It's like, we understand that that is a bad thing, or I think we understand that that's a bad thing. So why do we feel differently about beauty and looks? And I'm not asking that sarcastically. I'm asking that seriously if there is an actual answer that I'm missing.
As to why we think the looks thing is a bad thing?
Well, why we have a different reaction to the looks thing, where it's like if someone says, I'm average looking, we go, oh, blah, 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 blah. As opposed to, I'm average at football, we don't jump on them and say, no, you're Tom Brady, just like everyone else.
That's a really hard question to answer. My immediate response is that it has to do with the numbers game. And what I mean by that is there are very few people who are Tom Brady in football, but there are many more people who are good looking.
Okay.
And what I mean by that is not everyone's a model, but I've said this before. I believe that most people can be good looking if they take care of themselves.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that.
So I think that's more what it has to do with, and it has to do with basic self-esteem. Like, I agree with everything you said, Daniel, 100%. And that's the part of this post I agree with. But the part of the post I disagree with is she just sits there. I've been pretty plain Jane most of my life. That's just part of who I am. To me, she's given up on taking care of herself and given up on her own beauty. It's just, oh, this is who I am. And there's something very sad and tragic about that. Is she's not striving to be the ideal form of herself. You know, I'm not saying she's going to be Kate Beckinsale, to continue with the person we started talking about earlier. But she can be the idealized version of herself, but it seems like she's given up on that. It's an excuse. It's, you know, oh, well, I'm never going to be, you know, I'm just average looking, so I don't have to take care of my clothes. I don't have to go to the gym. I don't have to eat better. I'm just average looking. So I think there's two things going on here, where I agree with what you're saying about the culturally that we don't think it's okay to just say people, oh, well, you're not Tom Brady. But at the same time, we are allowing people to just accept being a second-rate version of themselves.
There's certainly that, and I don't mean to imply that at all. I'm just, it seems to me that the looks thing in particular is something that we don't, we like accept relativism outright in that, where it's like, no, everyone's beautiful, of course. But we don't accept it in everyone's Tom Brady, or to be less specific, everyone's an NFL caliber quarterback.
Oh, I see what you're saying there. And then in response to that, I agree completely with that. And I think this has to do with something we haven't dealt with as a species yet, as a culture yet, where it's the idea that, oh, we can say this is the most attractive man in the world and this is the most attractive woman in the world, when attraction is individual, necessarily. So, you know, we have this idea that as a kid, you define and you conceptualize your degree of attractiveness based upon the number of people of the opposite gender, sorry, trans people, who are attracted to you. And that becomes the base of your psychology. And that goes forward in life. Oh, well, I'm not attractive because a lot of women aren't into me, or I'm not attractive because a lot of men aren't into me. And we have this idea that there's this objective nature to it, in the sense of that objective means the most people, or one, where objectiveness is very contextualized. It's not anti-reality, but it's very contextualized and individualized. And this is something about objectivity, and especially when people hear objectivism and they hear Ayn Rand and they think, oh, well, she's saying it's objective, that people don't understand about the definition of objective. And I think that's where that comes from.
This could be a much longer conversation, I suspect,
yeah.
But I'm not going to continue down this road.
Yes.
One last note, I think a key piece of context that would be important for judging this person is literally seeing a picture of her.
Oh, 100%. Because she could be fucking actually hot and just hate herself.
She could be, yeah, she could be hot and then we're like, okay, give me a break. She could be actually plain Jane and then I'm like, okay, well, all right, fine. Like, well, what is it that you do try to strive to be great at? Or she could look like Trigglypuff and then it's what you were sort of accusing her of.
I'm not accusing her of anything. The one thing I'm going to disagree with you on, James, though, before we move on here is I think it's important to be integrated. And even if, you know, you have your one thing you're striving towards, it's still important to say, how am I taking care of myself physically as well? So I think that even what you just said about you strive to be healthy and strong, I would say that's more than this poster, this woman is doing.
Yeah, it's likely given her rhetoric. But as for me, I'm fine being plain Joe, you know?
Alas.
Next, Reddit. And I think this could be a longer conversation as well. I think we had some good Reddits this week. Yes, Justin, pat yourself on the back. Why do what makes you happy commercials always show people that like to hike / adventure and not show people that like to sit in a dimly lit room playing video games for hours on end?
Because watching the latter in a commercial would be boring? Because that's not the real naturalism? Answer. I don't know. I mean, that's sort of just a plain aesthetic disagreement with the question. Does anyone else have a different answer?
I mean, whenever I play video games for longer than 3 hours, that's when I have to stop and say, am I avoiding something that's making me miserable right now? And the answer is always yes when I play for more than 3 hours. And I'm pretty sure that's the case for everyone else who plays video games longer than 3 hours on any given day.
That was awesome. The show just worked to perfection. You guys both gave the correct answers and you both gave different answers and I love it. And now I'm going to integrate the two. So the reason it is romantic to say, hey, we're going to show people hiking and going on adventures for what makes you happy and not playing video games on hours on end is one, is a coping mechanism and is a method of evasion that involves inactivity, and the other involves activity. Now, I think we could propose alternate aesthetics that involve activity that isn't hiking, that isn't outdoorsy, but video games is not the alternative. Whoever's saying this is not aware of what James has just said, that if you're playing it for hours on end, you know, we're not talking about like, hey, it's a party and like we're playing Mario Party and we're punching each other when some of us get stars and other of us don't. No, we're not talking about that. We're talking about you're sitting there for hours on end in the dark, like the World of Warcraft episode of South Park, where mom, and then your mother comes down and you shit in a bucket and she goes and gets rid of it. That's what we're talking about.
Not a straw man at all.
I'm being over the top and I'm creating a straw man. But I know I'm agreeing with what James is saying, basically. And that's what it is. And, you know, there is a connection here. And this person is just not seeing it.
All good points.
All right. Last Reddit. What instantly makes you gain respect for someone?
Yeah, these are good.
You're welcome.
How dare you?
See, when we have rotating segments and we have time to build up and I don't have to pick Reddits every week, it's like Woker Joke. We can have good Woker Jokes every couple weeks and good Reddit on Reddits every couple weeks.
That's right. We all contribute. That's what I heard.
fucking
I have
communist.
One that's I guess it would be respect in what context. So this is in a work context. We just hired a digital assistant for me to help with project management. And one of the primary reasons I hired him, other than his skill set, is that when we have conversations, he will stop me in the middle of a sentence and say, I didn't understand what you just said. Like I don't know what that was. You know, what is B-roll, for instance? Like he'll stop, and so I don't know what that is. And it is so such great integrity that he doesn't want to fake it. That he actually just wants to understand what we're talking about, so we can integrate it into the project management stuff. Ah, not enough people are this way. So it's instant respect. Instant.
So just asking questions to understand?
Not faking it, basically. Like,
yeah.
Stopping me and saying, I didn't understand what you just said. Like, how have you met people like that? Like, it's really rare that people do that in life.
Most
people just go, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, yes, mm-hmm. In their head, they're going, I have no idea what's going on. But they don't want to show that because they don't want to look like they're dumb or they're not getting you or whatever it is. I like when someone will go, I don't know what that is. Could you tell me what that is?
That's a Confucius thing, isn't it? The wisest man is the one who admits
he knows
nothing
at all. A lot of my students will actually...
Yeah. Your students do that, James?
Yeah, a lot of my students will actually do that. They will say, like, yeah, I don't understand. It does gain respect for me. But when they pretend to understand, I'm like, okay, yeah, does that make sense? And they'll say, like, yeah. And then I'll just, like, look them dead in the eye and I'll say, nope, it didn't make sense to you. And there's this sense of relief that comes over their face when I call them out on it instead of them having to do it to themselves. It's kind of funny. like, oh my God, thank God he's going to actually explain that again, because I didn't want to admit I didn't get it, but I also, you know, want to get it. So,
yeah. And that's why I prefaced it by saying in the work context is where it specifically gained a lot of respect for people who do it.
Yeah.
Because in a work context, it's, you want to be the expert. You want to appear to know everything. And I like when people admit that they don't.
Well, the opposite is actually very frustrating. And what I mean by that is I'm often given assignments that I don't get any direction on. They just go do this. And then I do some version of it. And then I give it to them. And then they make me redo the whole thing because they gave me no direction. And if I immediately respond with, well, can you give me more context? Like, why are we doing this? What's the purpose of this? What do I need? They think that I'm upset about having to do the work and I'm trying to avoid doing the work. And then they're like, I'll just do it. And it's like, no, I'm not trying to avoid doing the work. You're just saying, do this document, create this product, and you're not giving me any reason for doing it or why it's being done or how to do it, what the purpose is. So when people are non-experts giving someone who wants to do it right work, it creates a problem, because then if you push them on it, they don't give you any direction, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. James?
The main thing that actually that I was going to put for this, and this is more in a social context, is when someone is willing to very directly disagree with me, but obviously in a polite, respectful way that gives reasons. Like, I'll say some opinion of mine and they'll disagree, but when they disagree in a very like what I just said, respectful way, but a very firm, logical way. And actually, I believe that is how I met the majority of my girlfriends in the past. I may want to date this. Like, that's like something that has happened. Like, several of my girlfriends, like, that's like how they caught my interest, actually. It's like, ooh, this one, maybe.
Sort of similar answer to that, and it's not necessarily the disagreement part. It's just the ability to explain yourself. It's just sort of like, you know why you think something or why you're doing something. It's not just sort of, well, I do this because this is the way it always is. It's just sort of like, well, why are you doing this? Like, because if you press people and you ask them, like, why do you like that? Or, you know, why is that your choice? Why is that your job? They very often cannot give an answer. But somebody who can and express some sort of value-based statement, that changes my opinion of them.
Good answers all around. Good Reddit for once.
All right, what did we learn this trip, Daniel?
I learned Gadot.
James?
I learned that, you know, you can just basically, whenever that 83% of sociology studies are used to confirm the agenda of the person citing the article.
That's right.
You know, why women are the stronger sex, and then also why, you know, how Republicans are having more sex than Democrats.
Justin, what did you learn?
I think Republicans are having more sex than Democrats. Based on that story, I learned that I need to do more thinking on what cultural myths exist that are actually myths. I don't think I think about that enough. And I think this was one of them, and it was sort of a wake-up call for me. You know, I said the Trump election was sort of one of those wake-up calls, too, that we're really being told things are true that aren't. And I think that that story was another example of that. Because I really, that idea that Democrats have to go around and say that they're sex positive and all of this stuff, that really is revealing to me. And I had never made that connection before, and I feel stupid for having not have made that connection. So I'm going to think more about that kind of stuff.
Well, listeners, if you made connections or something in the show particularly interested you, why don't you tell us about it on the social medias?
Or you could tell us what made you feel stupid on the show.
No, nothing makes our audience feel stupid. Our audience is the greatest.
I know, that's the why best. I said that.
That's right.
That was being funny.
No, it's not possible. So why don't you take to Twitter at The Midside or Facebook.com/TheMidside or Snapchat at The Midside or Instagram at The Midside and give us a little insight into your world, to your brain, to what you think of the show. Tell Justin if he's funny or not. Tell me if Katrina is better than I am. I vote yes. And then also go to iTunes, give us a 5-star review. Not a 4-star, not a 3, not even a 1, but a 5. Even if you hate the show, give us a 5-star review anyway, because we asked nicely. Thanks. That helps us climb the iTunes ladders. You can also subscribe on Google Play if you're not one of the Apple people. You can also listen to us via the Liberty.me feed. Libertarians, spreading the word of objectivism since libertarianism began. So thank you there, libertarians.
Just pissed off our entire libertarian audience. And
yeah, right. Saying, I was getting. It's true, but.
Nonetheless, I can make fun of them a little bit. So, speaking of libertarian, by the way, a film that I worked on is going to be screened at the Anthem Film Festival at Freedom Fest this summer. If you're there, it's called Regulating Rideshare. You should take a look. It's a short documentary about what happened to Uber and Lyft in Austin. Shameless plug.
Check that out in between all your fucking.
Take some time from sex and watch my short documentary. You can also find The Midside at patreon.com/TheMidside. Oh, Patreon. How we love thee. Our Patreon subscribers amaze me all the time. They give us money. And you too can become a Patreon subscriber by choosing to give us money every time we produce content. Not randomly, not monthly, not weekly, but every time we produce something. You can choose to give us $1 or 50 cents or 10 bucks, whatever you can afford. It helps us keep the lights on. But, of course, the thing that we need more than anything else in the whole world, other than money, although we'll take your money, is you telling a friend. Tell a friend. Turn them on to The Midside. Turn them on to the world that is JML and DTR and J-E. E. What's your middle name, James?
That's a secret.
Okay. Well, keep tuning in. Maybe James will tell us in the future. But otherwise, tell a friend. And until next time, you are much loved by me.
This concludes your journey into The Midside. I'm Justin M. Lesneski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a day. Relax, relax, just dance all day. Find the baddest boys to you.